Chapter 24. After the argument, Herzer hung out with the rest of the group as the afternoon descended into twilight. Two oxen had been roasting all afternoon, and the evening meal was a communal barbecue. Reenactors who had either gotten quickly reestablished or who were permanent residents of Raven's Mill had contributed various side dishes. Herzer got his first taste of cream corn and collard greens and decided that he could live with them. But what mostly surprised him was the incredible diversity. Before the fall, finding or inventing different food had been an almost universal pastime. For all that, there was a sameness. Before the fall, all dishes were blazingly hot, some to the point of insanity. The only difference seemed to be what type of acid was included, whether you got the delightful piquancy of sulfuric or the there-and-gone nuclear attack of fluoric. These foods, on the other hand, had so much more diversity, not only in the secondary spices that they used, but in the very fact that many of them didn't taste as if they were going to eat the insides off their containers. Some were dreadfully hot. He had a few bites of a cabbage dish, and after a chewing on it for a moment, he wondered why it hadn't eaten the spoon. But many of the others were not spicy at all. They were sweet or delicately flavored with subtle herbs. He was spooning down mushrooms that had simply been sautéed in butter, wine, and just a hint of some herb, absolute ambrosia, when Shylyn sat down next to him with two cups in her hand. "Master Edmund has graciously agreed to let the town raid his wine cellar," she said, handing him a cup. Herzer took a small sip and inhaled gratefully. The wine was heavy and sweet, with an almost earthy aftertaste and a decided kick. "This is good," Herzer said, setting down the cup and spearing more mushrooms. "Are you referring to the mushrooms, or are you being existentialist?" Shylyn asked. "Well, the mushrooms, yes," Herzer replied, holding out some on the fork. "But what I really meant was this, here." He shrugged as she leaned forward and delicately pulled the mouthful off, nodding her head in agreement. "Better than being out in the woods." "Not better than it was a month ago," Shylyn said darkly. "Yes, true," Herzer said, pushing the remaining mushrooms around, but there was an odd, thoughtful frown on his face. "Penny for your thoughts," Shylyn said, cocking her head to the side with a smile, but then she laughed. "What?" "Penny for your thoughts," Shylyn replied. "How old is that saying?" "Yes," Herzer said, chuckling. "I mean, you are offering to pay a lot of money, or very little. It all depends on the value of the penny." "I am willing to pay a lot for your thoughts, Herzer," she said, leaning forward again and looking him in the eye. He replied with a frown. A muscle in his left cheek worked for a moment. "You said that it was better a month ago, and I agreed." "Sure," she said with a slight shrug. That reality was inarguable. "Yes and no," he said, the muscle working again. This, he said, waving his arms around to the groups talking and eating. In the distance was faint laughter. "This is two things that were not a month ago," he continued. "One, it is real. It is not some Ren fair where if the ground is too hard you can port in a pillow, and when it gets too late you can port home. This is real. If you want a pillow, you had better go out there and figure out a way to make a pillow. I don't know why that is important, but I can feel it in my soul." He held up his hand as Shylyn started to say something. "Hang on a second," he said. "Give me a little bit. The second thing is that it has soul. Before, did you ever see so much passion, so much intensity out of people as you see today?" "No." "Why?" "Because this is real. Before the fall, no matter what you were discussing, no matter what you were arguing, you knew that the next day you would be getting up and going back and doing more or less the same thing all over again. But the point was, you knew you were getting up. You knew that you were going to be alive the next day. Now the questions are not trivial. Not only lives, but generations depend upon them. These people know that not only for themselves, but for their children and the children that they will have, they must work and succeed, and that mother will not catch them when they fall. That brings a passion and intensity to things that I have never seen before. Now, if I could press a button and turn it back to the way that it was before, would I?" "Yes. But that does not mean that I would not have regrets. There is a soul to this, to everything here. a soul that did not exist before the fall. So yes and no, he concluded, picking out one last mushroom. Damn, it's cold. Wow, Shylin said, frowning. That was like a Chitsworth. Nah, Herzer laughed, shaking his head. You know, like maybe a tenth. I begin to understand why you seem to have a girl on your arm whenever I see you, Herzer, she said, smiling. Maybe you could explain it to me. It's been a very recent and very unexpected thing. If you're talking about that philosophical wandering, Bast hadn't said a word to me until she walked up, looked me over like a piece of meat, and told me that I needed a bath, but otherwise I'd do. Hmm, Shylin replied thoughtfully. She took a sip of her wine and cleared her throat. Speaking of baths, they're probably packed, Herzer shrugged, taking a sip from his own cup. Nope, most people are still eating and sitting around, Shylin said. Herzer looked at the crowd and had to admit that it was the vast majority of the town. If we hurry? Shylin continued in a questioning tone. Okay, Herzer replied, then paused. Don't baths? He started, then cleared his throat. Don't the baths make you feel uncomfortable? He finally said in an absolutely neutral tone. Yes, she said, but it would be less so if you were along. Herzer started to smile. Then an alarm bell went off in his head. Shylin, Cruz. Cruz doesn't have me staked out, she replied tartly. I'm not planning on betting you, Herzer. The operative term here is bath. I'm aware of that, Herzer said, not sure if he was aware of it or not. And you're aware of that, that the operative term is bath, I mean. But Cruz's feelings are going to be hurt if we go wandering off. Herzer suddenly realized by the expression on Shylin's face, among other things, that he was in a situation where he was going to piss someone off, either Cruz or Shylin or possibly both. Shylin was not taking his careful hints, and Cruz was not going to accept his explanation. Look, buddy, it was either have her all pissed off at me or you all pissed off at me. All it was a bath. Okay, so I saw your girlfriend naked and you haven't yet. Big deal. Nope, definitely wouldn't work. And this image of an axe or a mallet descending upon his sleeping head, wielded by either Cruz or Shylin, kept flashing through his mind. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. He finally came to the conclusion that if he was going to get bludgeoned to death anyway, he might as well see Shylin, who, after all, was a comely wench, naked before he died. All of this flashed through his brain in well under a half a second, hardly a pause. He had just opened his mouth to seal his fate when he saw Rachel coming through the crowd. Hang on a second, there's a friend of mine, he said to Shylin, waving his arm. Hi, Rachel. How have you been doing? Hello, Herzer, she said, walking over with a slightly abstracted frown. How are the hands? They're fine, Herzer said, holding them up, palms outward to show the heavy calluses. I think you guys have met, but I don't think you've met, he continued. Sue Shylin, Rachel Gorbani. Rachel? Shylin? We met when you came out to the camp and gave us a briefing on, Shylin said, then paused. Mother has dredged up the ancient term, feminine hygiene, Rachel said with a smile. Oh, Lord, you're not going to start talking about that, are you? Herzer chuckled. I certainly hope not, Rachel replied. What are you guys doing? We were just headed over to the baths, Herzer said, then paused awkwardly. Rachel looked at both of them in the pause until Shylin chuckled. I think what he is avoiding saying is, would you like to come along? Shylin explained. Well, two's company and three's a crowd, Rachel replied dryly. And if it's just more company, I'm truly not interested. It's not like that, Herzer started to say. What Herzer would be saying if he could get his foot out of his mouth is that he would appreciate a chaperone, Shylin said, pursing her lips. It's not like that either, Herzer said desperately. So what is it like? Rachel asked, putting her hands on her hips. First you go trotting off with Bast, then you're rolling around in the woods with one of the serving girls, and next you're going to the baths with two women? Since you put it that way, Shylin said, standing up and putting her hands on her own hips. She gave Herzer a mock scowl. Would you care to explain yourself? Oh, for pity's sake, Herzer said, throwing his hands in the air. How did I get myself into this? I lured you into it, if you'll remember, Shylin finally relented. Come on, Rachel, it will be fun. and Herzer really would prefer someone else along. He's got this weird thing about me and Cruz. Who's Cruz? Rachel asked. I'll tell you when we're up to our necks in hot water, Shylin said. Oh, all right, Rachel replied. And I'll tell you all of Herzer's dirty little secrets. Deal, Shylin said, sticking out her hand. And I'll buy, Herzer added, heaving himself to his feet. That way I can brag about getting two women in the bath with me with a straight face. If you do, you will rue the day, Rachel warned. The baths, while not deserted, were not overrun either. Having stored their gear and collected their receipts, they worked their way through the stations. Herzer was as careful as possible about keeping his eyes in his head, but he had to admit that both of the girls were extremely pretty, with or without clothes. Shylin was long and cool, with high, pert breasts and carefully sculpted hips and bottom. There was just enough rounding there to draw the male eye, but it was understated enough to be fashionable. Rachel, on the other hand, was very near his ideal of female form. High, firm, well-rounded breasts with just enough sag to really accentuate their shape. Lovely rib cage, narrow but not tiny waist, rounded hips, not wide but definitely flaring out from the waist, and the most perfectly rounded bottom he had ever seen. Not for the first time he wondered how much of his liking for the form was early canalization. He had had a crush on Rachel since before he knew what to do about it. Almost all of his heroines to be rescued had looked somewhat like Rachel, complete to the red hair and blue eyes. He was very cautious not to let them catch him glancing, and was even more cautious to control the natural male reaction to the situation. As he turned around to finish rinsing off, he started to recite the names of all the Spartans at Thermopylae. When that initially was insufficient, he started at the end and worked his way back. The mental attention to details other than perky breasts, pertly rounded bottoms, and Mons Venus worked, and by the time he had a towel wrapped around him, it wasn't clear that he was evincing any interest at all. Then, of course, the sight of Rachel in a nearly transparent bath sheet caused him to start reciting again. The fact that the towel barely made it to the top of her thighs while being tugged down far enough to show a tremendous amount of cleavage required that he concentrate on doing so in the order and nature of their deaths. Herzer, what are you muttering? Rachel asked. Military history, he said in an only slightly strained voice. You first. Looking at anything but the two girls who preceded him, he followed Rachel to a tub that was unoccupied. There were about 10 people in the room scattered around in groups, and more than one of the males watched the two girls with a healthy amount of interest. This is why I hate coming in here, Rachel said, turning around to sweep the other bathers with a glare. I hate to be ogled. She waited until she was sure no one was looking and shifted the skimpy towel around so that she could use it as a shield as she lowered herself into the bath. Herzer thought it was quite the most erotic thing he had ever seen. Well, I don't ogle you, he said primly. Well, of course not, she snorted. She lowered herself until everything from the neck down was submerged in water and let out a sigh. We've known each other since we were kids. Of course you don't look. Well, yeah, Herzer said, taking a covert deep breath and willing himself to utter flaccidity. Once he was sure he was under control, he flipped the towel off with becoming modesty and lowered himself into the bath quickly. What about me? Shylin asked, raising one eyebrow and smiling in what could be taken as invitation. You're a friend, Herzer replied with a shrug. Down, boy! Down! Bad boy! Shylin wrinkled her eyebrows and peered at him as if attempting to divine what his real answer was. Shylin, Herzer sighed, do you want to go to bed? Or more precisely, do you want to go to bed and have sex? When her face closed down, he nodded. Even if I was interested, it would take a real son of a bitch to press you right now, right? Yes, she said quietly. I am many things. Well, I can be a son of a bitch, but in this, I'm not willing to be. She wrinkled a brow again and then nodded, accepting the statement, but still puzzled. Herzer, Rachel said dryly, but looking at him in a very searching way. Always the paladin. Not always, Herzer corrected with a grin. Paladins don't get laid much. Shylin laughed delightedly, and even Rachel had to smile. Can anyone join this party, or are only young folk allowed? The man who addressed them was small and wiry, with a graying beard and bright blue eyes. "Hello, Augustus," Rachel said. "Of course you can join us." The man whipped off his towel immodestly and hopped into the water like a frog. "These were a grand idea," he said, ducking his head under the water and coming back up blowing. "I'd prefer a leather ton, but we haven't enough leather to make a decent shoe." "And Lord knows we've got wood," Herzer said, shaking his head ruefully. "Augustus, this is Herzer Herrick and Sue Shylin. They're in one of the apprenticeship programs. Herzer, Shylin, Augustus Sharp. He's one of the reenactors who started an industry since the fall. In his case, tanning. You'll probably be working with him sometime soon." "And you've been cutting wood, have you?" Augustus asked, peering at them dubiously. He seemed to like what he saw, for after a moment he nodded at them approvingly. "It's good that you've gotten experience in the woods. You'll be needing it." "Why?" Shylin asked. "I mean, we don't have any idea what we're going to be doing. I might never go into the woods again. I understand most people who were in period didn't." "Well, there's period and period," Augustus said. "We're more early industrial pioneer than high middle ages. And I meant for the great hunt, lassie." "The great hunt?" Herzer asked. "Gee, ye hadn't heard?" Augustus replied with a wink. "It'll be grand bonny fun." Herzer contemplated Augustus appearing and disappearing brogue for a moment, then shrugged. "Anyone going to tell us what it is?" "My father's brilliant idea to give mother and me more work," Rachel replied. "Ah, you know better than that, lassie," Augustus corrected. "'Twas not Edmund, 'twas Myron that had the idea." "Point," Rachel admitted. "Okay, Myron's great idea to give us more work. I said before that we had no leather," the tanner said, ignoring the change. "The point is we've few enough slaughter animals as it is. The hunters have been bringing some in, but not enough. We need meat, bones, hooves, everything that you get from slaughter animals. And skin, of course." "Okay," he said, splashing water on his face and grimacing. "I was a huckster before the fall. One of the people who could make things to sell at the fair. I made leather goods, custom order, all very nice, hand-stitched and tooled. A hobby, really, but they were all hobbies, weren't they? I pick up a few energy credits, who cares?" he added with a grimace. "But the point is, I can go from a raw skin to tooled leather. If I've got the skins, do you know what the hunters brought in all of last week?" "No," Herzer said, fascinated by the diatribe. 2 farrow cattle. We're eating them now. 6 boar, 5 deer, a mess of furs, 3 turkeys, and an emu. That's not enough meat for 3,000 people, and it's definitely not enough leather. Not to mention the other things," Shylin added with a smile. "Ack, aye," Augustus replied, winking at her. "The hooves for the glue, the bones for the tools and the fertilizer, and a fine mess of brawn for a pretty lady?" "Brawn?" Shylin asked. "Pig brains," Herzer replied without thinking, "usually served in gravy." "Yuck!" "So we need more animals," Herzer said. "The great hunt." "Yes, and," Rachel replied, "there are people who are already lining up to be farmers. One thing that makes farming easier is if you've got animals as part of your farm. There are ferals in the woods, so the idea is to gather some of those at the same time. And as my former," Herzer paused for a moment, "lady friend pointed out, there are also tigers in the woods."
"Aye," Augustus said, winking madly, "und that's where it starts to get interestin'."
"Ooh," Shylin said, "now I begin to understand the comment about work for the doctors." "Oh, forget the tigers," Rachel shrugged, sitting up so her breasts were just under the water. Herzer tried very hard not to notice the interesting ripple effect from the shrug. "They're out there, but there are feral pigs all over the place."
"Pigs?" Shylin asked, wrinkling her brow. "What's the problem with pigs?"
"Oh, sure," Rachel said acidly. "Squeak, squeak, see the funny little pig. Ah, ha, ha, pretty and pink and fluffy. Wait till you see these things."
"Oh, I haven't seen them, but I've heard of them," Herzer laughed. 400 kilos of bristle and tusk. This is going to be so much fun.
When are they planning this?
I think I'm going to have a broken leg."
"If you've got a broken leg, they put you on skinning duty," Rachel said.
"Broken arm?"
"Carrying buckets of slop."
"Ah, I've seen videos of a skinning out. No, thank you. Yuck."
"You should have run away with your lady friend," Rachel said.
"Which one?" Shylin asked with a malicious grin. "Begorum boy," Augustus cried. "How many do you have?"
Herzer just groaned and slid down until his head was under the water.
Dene looked up from the sweating young man on the cot and nodded at Edmund and the woman accompanying him. Dene hadn't seen this particular reenactor before, but she knew the type of old. The woman was about 20 kilos overweight, which, with the current conditions and medical conditions before the fall, had required conscious work, and was loaded down with silver jewelry. Most of it consisted of zodiac signs or other occult objects, and the rest consisted of crystals. "Dene, this is Sharon. She's an herbalist," Edmund said. "I don't think this is the time, Edmund," Dene said sharply, lifting up a bandage from the young man's arm and wincing at the condition of the wound underneath. The young man had run afoul of an axe head, and the wound had almost immediately started to fester. Modern human immune systems were strong, but the skin was one of the hardest areas for the systems to access. Now the infected area had gone green-brown with gangrene, and if she didn't figure out some way to stop the spread, it was going to kill him. Quick. "Gangrene," the woman said, leaning forward and sniffing with a disgusted shake of her head. "There's not an herb on earth that can cure that. You need sulfonamide or one of the Silens." Dene turned and looked at the woman sharply, at which the herbalist gave a grin. "Didn't expect me to be dredging up those terms, did you, doctor? But penicillin's not but a mold, and sulfonamide. Well, that's just tar that's been worked over, eh? Do you have any?" Dene asked. "No, but I just got here," the herbalist said with a nod, "and I don't think either would work here. Have you tried debriding?" "Yes, but it's getting ahead of us," she said, waving at a fly. "The damn things got in no matter what you did, and they had an unpleasant tendency to land on open wounds." "Leave it," Edmund said suddenly, as she waved at another that was trying to land on the mangled flesh. "What?" both of the women asked, then looked at each other sheepishly. "Let's take this outside," Edmund said, gesturing to the end of the infirmary. It wasn't much of an infirmary, just an open bay with some cots and a surgery on one end that mostly consisted of a well-scrubbed table and some tools that made her think more of the Inquisition than medicine. But it was getting better, and if this herbalist knew what she was doing, they might get better still. Dene was well aware that her knowledge of medicines, how they were made or administered, was barely theoretical. But between them, if the woman really knew anything, they might make one decent pre-industrial doctor. She waved the fly away against his protestations and laid a fresh bandage on the wound, then followed Edmund out. "What about flies is good, Edmund?" she snapped as they got outside. "They carry every imaginable sort of filth." "Yes, they do," he said, "and they lay eggs in rotting flesh which turn into maggots. And what do maggots eat?" Dene stopped and thought for a moment, then shook her head. "You want me to let maggots eat his flesh?" "Dead flesh, yes," Edmund said uncomfortably. "Look, I know it sounds crazy, and really they're supposed to be raised maggots. You raise them on clean, dead flesh, meat. But we don't have time for that, do we?" "No," Dene said simply. "We're going to lose him if we don't stop it. The traditional response is high amputation to get ahead of the infection." "Can you make any of the stuff we're talking about fast?" Edmund asked Sharon. "No," she replied. "I have to find penicillin mold, out of millions of molds. I need dishes to make cultures. You can often find tetracycline molds in old graves, but we don't have any of those either." "Graveyard dirt?" Edmund said, then shook his head. "The point is, maggots do work. We just have to worry about secondary infections." "What about," Sharon said, creasing her brow, "what about finding a handful in something and washing them?" "Ugh," Dene replied, "I think I'd rather let the flies land." "Gangrene is an anaerobic infection anyway," Edmund said. "Keeping the wound open would help more than hurt, I think." "Is there any way to get more oxygen to it?" Sharon asked. "Not short of a hyperbaric chamber," Dene replied, "or some way to separate out oxygen, which is a high-pressure, super-cold method. I'm not even sure it would get past the pressure protocols." "Shida?" Edmund asked. "She's refused to give up any power so far," Dene said exasperatedly. "She has enough to go gallivanting all over, but none for medicine." Edmund shook his head at her in a meaningful way, then sighed. "I think the maggots are the only choice. That and some minor bacteriofacients I can come up with," Sharon said. "There are some herbs. I can make up a wash pretty quickly. It won't be as good as antibiotics, but it will help some. Do it, Dene said. Please. And we need to get you a lab set up. Edmund?
I'll see the glassier about getting the appropriate materials, he grimaced. He's going to love this on top of everything else.
Tell him that he might need it soon, Dene replied sharply. That should center his thoughts nicely.
Sharon knows other herbs and medicines as well, Tabit noted carefully, including tansy.
Not something I recommend, short of absolute necessity, the woman interjected. It's terribly dangerous from all I've heard, but there are others. I have some poppy seeds, so as soon as we can get some poppies growing, we'll have opiates. Strong and addicting, but there's few painkillers that equal it. And then there's willow bark.
That one I know, Dene said with a chuckle. But really, that's about as far as I can go. That and cherry bark.
I think you two will get on just fine, Edmund said. I've got other things to do, Dene said dryly. That's okay. See you tonight?
Hopefully, he answered glumly.
You're finally back and we never see each other. With a nod, he strode briskly away in the general direction of the town hall.
Well, you at least get to sleep together, Sharon said with a sly wink.
No, we don't, Dene replied.
But, well,
Sharon stopped with a puzzled frown.
Leave it, Dene said, then shook her head. Let me put it this way. I may be the first candidate to try tansy.
Sharon looked at her for a moment until she realized the doctor was serious, then blanched.
Oh, my goddess!